Marty Moscowane, welcome to Radio Times. The Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board has as many as six bids for a second casino license in Philadelphia. Bart Blatstein's plan is for a sprawling entertainment complex on North Broad Street. Steve Wynn is eyeing property just north of Sugar House in Fishtown. The Goldenberg Group's proposal is for 8th and Market, the site of a parking lot they own. The Parkway Corporation's casino would be across the street from the Convention Center at 15th and Cherry. And two groups, Penn National Gaming and Stadium Casino LLC, would site their casinos in South Philadelphia near the sports complex. Even Congressman Bob Brady has a casino idea, one that would be run by the city and be located near the Walt Whitman Bridge. So today, Radio Times, is Philadelphia ready for a second casino? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We begin our conversation with Alan Greenberger. He's Philadelphia's Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Director of Commerce. He's also Chairman of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission and a board member of the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation. And Alan Greenberger, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine.
Are you surprised that there are so many proposals for a second casino? No license?
Not really, only because we were aware that a number of people were out there forming partnerships and that this has been bubbling up now for several months. So can't say I'm surprised, no.
Do you, or does the mayor, does the city have a position on whether Philadelphia needs or wants a second casino?
Well, we have a position that the state legislature had authorized a second casino here. We're supportive of that. There are a lot of jobs at stake, and I think it's clear from the fact of there being six proposals that there are groups out there that are ready to put a lot of money on the line in the belief that there's a market for these things.
One of the concerns is, so you look at Sugar House in Philadelphia, you look at Parks, you look at Harris, and you look at the casino in Valley Forge, that in this region there are already four casinos. Do you think there's enough business to support a fifth casino?
Well, you know, I'm not the expert in that kind of analysis, but as I said, there are groups out there that are ready to put a lot of money on the line, clearly with the belief that there is a market here for that. The state legislature said that was the case 6 years ago, and so, yes, it appears to be the case.
And I outlined the six proposals, and they are for proposals around the city. Do you and does the mayor, does the city have a preferred location for a casino?
No. We nice try, but
okay. I'm trying.
I was going to tell you, Marty, that this is going to have to be a bit of a boring conversation because this is really, we can talk about process, and I do want to talk about process. But our intention here is to take, you know, we're taking this very seriously. We will analyze these proposals very carefully. We intend to, and have already started working with the Gaming Control Board to coordinate schedules. They have a very rigorous process that they have to go through. They're making this decision. They will have public hearings that we obviously intend to testify at, and in order to be prepared for that, we need to do our own analysis, and we need to have our own public input process so that when we go to testify, we are not simply representing what we've done internally, but we've heard more from citizens and neighborhoods.
Here's a process question for you. What, though, can you do to avoid the kind of conflict and controversy associated with the first and second casinos? The second casino, of course, didn't come into fruition a couple of years ago, but we have Sugar House. How do you avoid the conflicts and a lot of the public frustration with how Sugar House came to be?
Well, you might want to elaborate a bit on what frustration you're talking about. Certainly, there was more controversy in the end around the Foxwood site. And, I think the way we're going to avoid that this time, one is we all have more experience now with at least one casino, and we understand how it's operating and we can have some perspective on that. But I think the second way is to do exactly what we've been doing, which is we've met now with the Gaming Board. I'm in touch with the Chief Counsel at the Gaming Board with some regularity now so that we're fully in coordination on process. We're not going to trip over each other. We want to make sure our process feeds into theirs in the appropriate way. And we do want to ultimately take public input so that we've heard from people here on the ground as well as whatever they're going to hear.
Because there was some criticism from the public that they felt they really didn't have the kind of input that they felt they deserved.
You know, it's always hard to measure exactly what that means, but we're going to put together a process that's going to give everybody a chance, and the gaming board is too, to give people a chance to really say what they want to say. The good part here, I guess, is that we're not dealing now with the total unknown. We do have now several years of experience with one of these things, both the process that got us there, but also with the thing, you know, in operation for a couple of years. And I think this at least answers some of the questions that came up the first time that people, frankly, had no answers for because there was no experience.
Has the city made money off of Sugar House?
Well, there's a host fee associated with Sugar House, and there are some tax settlements that's associated with Sugar House. So, yes, the city is getting money from Sugar House just the way the state is. Mm-hmm. And some of that money is also directed to the school district.
And do you know how much money?
That we're getting in total?
That we're getting in total, or I have gotten in total.
You know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I know that on the Gaming Control Board's website, they post the revenues of the different casinos, and there's a 4% host fee, and then there's a small increment on a tax settlement. So, you know, we're getting that kind of money times their gross revenue.
And has Sugar House been a job creator for Philadelphia?
Yes, it has. I mean, they have probably 1,000 people that work for them, and these are pretty decent jobs.
Decent jobs meaning that they pay?
They're reasonably paid, and they have benefits.
And is it possible to say that the money from Sugar House has helped to make a dent in Philadelphia's problem of poverty?
It's hard to know how to equate those two, but every time that you have an institution or a business that produces 1,000 jobs, that's a very good thing, and that is a dent in poverty. I wouldn't want to say that this is any solution to poverty. It's a big business that employs a lot of people.
I was looking at some analysis of the people working at Sugar House saying that 67% of the employees there are Pennsylvania residents. Do you know how many are Philadelphia residents?
They have reported that to us, and it's a healthy number, but I don't have the number in my head, so I wouldn't want to volunteer something and find out I was wrong.
Bob Brady has an interesting proposal. I'd be curious about what you think of it, which is basically having a city-owned and run casino. What do you think of that?
Well, we're not here's the simple part of it. We're not involved in any of the proposals that are out there right now. And we don't think that a city can be involved as an ownership position in a casino.
Even though, and I think part of his argument is that if a state runs a lottery, why can't a city run a casino?
There may be attorneys out there who can demonstrate that point, but our city solicitor and the previous city solicitor say that we are not in a position to be in an ownership role.
What then is the process for the city going forward?
Well, the first thing to understand is that the process of vetting and selecting a licensee is probably going to take 10 to 12 months for the state to accomplish it. And they have a very methodical system, which if you'll indulge me, I'd like to sort of walk you through.
No, please do.
The first thing, they're going to take whatever applications come in are going to come in today. It's not even assured that they're going to get all the applications that filed early briefs with us last week, because this thing is very fluid, and we'll know by the end of the day exactly who's applied and how many of them there are. They first need time, they being the state, first need time to actually go through the applications. There are a lot of moving pieces in these applications, and determine that the applications are in fact complete, that the applicants are now qualified to be more thoroughly vetted. That's going to take some time. It sounded to us like it was sort of a 30 to 45-day process, because there's a lot of material to go through. Once that's done and there's a group of applicants who are now eligible for consideration, they're not even eligible for a license yet, there's probably a 4 to 6 month process during which there has to be a lot of vetting of confidential materials, who are the owners, what are their backgrounds, what are their financial statements, judging finances, integrity, who's operating, all that business the state does, and the state does, you know, only with confidential information that's been given to them. after that, once that process is done, that creates a set of applicants who are eligible now for a license. And then, of course, somewhere in this process, there's the beginning of public hearings. There's the beginning of analysis of the sites themselves and their likely inputs. That's where we're going to be most active. And then probably somewhere around this time, or maybe a month or two before this time next year, the gaming board will actually identify a licensee.
I'm curious about how many pages in that application.
You know, I haven't actually seen one
I've heard
myself,
it's a lot.
But knowing that how many moving pieces there are, there's a lot of pages.
One of the concerns, and I don't know whether it's too soon to tell with Sugar House, one of the concerns was that if you bring casinos into a city like Philadelphia or any area, that it will end up crowding out other entertainments, other restaurants, retail stores. Has that turned out to be true in Philadelphia or not?
Well, we've not seen it at Sugar House. Now, admittedly, Sugar House is living on a site that is somewhat isolated, but if you look at Sugar House, at least in relationship to the nearest commercial center, which is in Northern Liberties, I don't think that it's had any impact on it. And then, if anything, we're starting to see proposals, for more entertainment and commercial activity closer into Sugar House. So I don't think it's had that impact at all.
And what about concerns about social problems, whether it's crime associated with casinos or even addiction? Has the city looked at that? Have you looked at that?
No, but state. I mean, we've looked at some of those things. We certainly know what we certainly know that the crime moving from the casino into the neighborhood has not happened around Sugar House, and the police have been very clear about that. They track these things very carefully. Traffic is another one that's brought up, and again, there have been no particular traffic issues associated with people getting to Sugar House. The property seems to have enough parking to do what it has to do, and we're not aware of a lot of people parking in the neighborhoods and causing any congestion there. Gambling addiction is always an issue out there. That's been acknowledged by the state for a long time. They monitor that very carefully, and you'd have to ask them more detailed questions on it.
And final question to you, Alan. How would you then describe the relationship between the city and the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board?
We've met with them fairly recently, and as I said, I talked to the chief counsel. It's starting to be every other day. We have a very good professional working relationship. I think we're very pleased, and I think they're very pleased with the level of cooperation and their willingness certainly to take very seriously what we ultimately have to say and offer into this system, and our willingness to work within the parameters of how they need to work, both legally and operationally, how their schedule is going to run.
Well, not boring at all. Alan Greenberger, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times, getting our conversation started. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Marty. Thanks.
You're welcome. And that's Alan Greenberger, Philadelphia's Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Director of Commerce. Suzette Parmley is waiting in the wings. She's been covering the gambling industry for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from PNC Wealth Management, helping customers live achievement by crafting personalized solutions to grow, preserve, and transfer wealth. More information is available from John Conaway at 215-585-5438.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. As part of a citywide celebration of Frank Furness on the anniversary of his death, PAFA is exhibiting architectural drawings of the Furness-designed historic landmark building. On view through December 30th, these rare drawings document the evolution of this historical building. More information online at pafa.org or by phone at 215-972-7600.
In 1989, five young African American and Latino teenagers confessed to a terrible crime, raping and beating a young white woman. The problem is they didn't do it.
Once you have a person broken down to the point that they just want to get out of a room, then you can pretty much get them to say anything.
Raymond Santana is featured in a new film about the case, and he tells us more about it next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY. The Philadelphia Business Journal supports WHYY and is hosting the third annual Small Business Expo Delivering Happiness, December 11th at the PA Convention Center featuring Jen Lim of Zappos. PBJExpo.com or 215-238-5126.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Today is a deadline for proposals to the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board for a second casino license set aside for the city of Philadelphia. At least six proposals have been made public. We just said goodbye to Alan Greenberger, and now we say hello to Suzette Parmley. She's a business reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She covers the gambling industry in Atlantic City and in Pennsylvania, as well as hotels and tourism. And Suzette Parmley, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
That's good to hear. Let me give out that phone number to our listeners. And again, it's 1-888-477-9499. Suzette, I'm going to ask you what I asked Alan Greenberger. Are you surprised mm-hmm. that there are as many as six proposals for a casino license?
Actually, I'm going to have to admit I was. The decision was made in not so far ago, only 4 months ago, early July, that the gaming board decided the second license would stay in Philadelphia. There were efforts in Harrisburg to put it out to a statewide bid, possibly by other lawmakers representing other parts of the state. That effort was thwarted. It didn't have enough support and couldn't make it on the agenda for the fall legislative calendar in Harrisburg. So they decided, it was only in early, the first week of July, it was going to stay in Philadelphia. So these guys really had to scramble and get sites, get partners, you know, try to line up financing and an operator. So very surprised, Marty.
Well, we're talking about Bart Blatstein, his plan for North Broad Street, Steve Wynn looking at a piece of property north of Sugar House, the Goldenberg Group looking at a site at 8th and Market, two sites in South Philadelphia, one at 15th and Cherry. Kind of spread out all over the city, Suzette.
Absolutely. It's going to be a very competitive competition here for that license. I told somebody it's turned into a real horse race, if, you know, for lack of a better term. If I was to handicap this today, probably as far as name recognition, financing, and just clout in the gambling industry, you'd have to give it to Steve Wynn. Based on those factors, he's got a tremendous amount of influence in Las Vegas, and he's making most of his money out of Macau, believe it or not. He's got two properties out there.
And that's Macau, China.
Macau, so yes, southern portion of China.
Now, but I wonder, because he had been associated with the Foxwoods project and then pulled out. Mm-hmm. Do you think that might hurt him with the Gaming Control Commission?
I'm going to have to say yes on that. I mean, you know, memories don't die down. That he was very much he stepped forward to try to salvage that project after nearly 4 years of going nowhere. And he abruptly pulled out, like, within a week later. Something happened, or he didn't like how the process was moving. The thing with Steve Wynn, he's just meticulous about every detail and really likes 100% control of his projects. So it doesn't surprise me he's going at this particular project by himself. The other one was a partnership, and there were going to be problems with that because he didn't have full control on how it was going to look like, who was going to design it. And my understanding was he pulled out. He didn't like the construction manager involved in the Foxwoods project.
He described this site that he's looking at. It's north of Penn Treaty Park and also north of Sugar House as delicious.
Yes, 60 acres, which is known as the Anderson site. And like I said, this was only 4 months ago. These folks really had to scramble to find viable sites to plant a casino, which requires a lot of surface space, not just for the casino, but the parking also. If you notice Atlantic City, those things are like football fields. I'm there quite a bit. They require a lot of surface space for everything, for traffic, for moving in and out of there. So you're going to need a lot of land to build these things.
Well, another splashy proposal, and I want to ask you about this, and I do want to get to some callers, Suzette, which is Bart Blatstein's proposal, actually at your former home where you were at the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yes.
On North Broad Street. He's calling this the Provence.
Provence. Yes.
What is his vision for his casino on North Broad?
You know, he doesn't even want to refer to it as a casino. It's an entertainment casino hotel complex that, you know, will have all these other amenities and have a French decor style architecture to it. and basically taking the whole concept of, you know, Pennsylvania being home to only, you know, convenience casinos don't have, that don't offer a whole lot, and actually taking that to the next level with this type of $700 million investment that has all these other amenities that rival Atlantic City. So it's very interesting. He doesn't even want to call it a casino, from my understanding. It's going to be at a different level, according to him.
And that's Suzette Parmley. She's a business reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She covers the gambling industry. And we called her up to join us today in Radio Times because the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board is going to decide on a second casino license for the city of Philadelphia. And it looks like about 6 proposals have been made public. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you think about a second casino in Philadelphia? Let me get Liz from South Philadelphia to join us. And Liz, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi
there.
I would like to hear your guests speak a bit on the sustainability of casino development beyond job creation. And I guess for the moment, move past fears of traffic congestion, gambling addiction, and crime spilling from the casino sites. What about the fact that positive public green spaces, low and high-end housing, perhaps a hotel, athletic facilities, dynamic multi-use spaces that could include the surrounding community and attract visitors as a more perhaps viable alternative to a sprawling complex such as the Provence, for the city and the Pennsylvania government to throw their weight behind.
So you're saying, Liz, that the Provence is not inclusive enough? It doesn't have all the things that you listed there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just inherently the Provence would not include those things that I listed there.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, as far as job creation goes and all the reasons that the city is giving as to say why a place such as the Provence would be a good idea, maybe the alternatives I just proposed could be equally better.
Well,
or equally good,
Liz,
or better.
Liz, thanks for the call. And I should say the city is at least at this point agnostic on these various proposals. But to you, Suzette, this issue of sustainability and even the fact that there are now 4 casinos in the Philadelphia area,
right,
is there a point at which there aren't going to be enough gamblers to sustain a fifth casino?
Very good question, Marty. We did a poll last month. It was a part of our presidential poll package. That was a big concern. Over 40% didn't want a second casino in the city for various reasons that have already been discussed on your show, you know, crime concerns, traffic concerns. But also, you talk to gaming analysts, there comes a point where is the market to the point of oversaturation already? Monthly revenues in recent months have shown that Harrah's Philadelphia in Chester, PA, has been down in revenue the last few months because it's having to share the market space now with Valley Forge, which joined last March to become the 11th casino in Pennsylvania. You have 4 gambling halls right now within a 25-mile radius of each other. And what it's basically doing, you add a fifth in there. The biggest loser is probably going to be Sugar House.
Yes.
Depending on where they put it in the city, there is only so much of a pool of, you know, regular gamblers, and that becomes tapped out. And who do you go to after that? Atlantic City is going through the same process. They've basically lost a big portion of their market to Pennsylvania casinos. And now you're going to add a fifth within the Philadelphia area. The big concern is the market already saturated? And who's going to be the winner in this, in the end run, if the revenue that you're so much after for the city becomes a zero-sum gain? One's going to lose, Sugar House, so a Wynn Resort or a Wynn Casino can, you know, generate revenue on its own. So you're basically going to be distributing that new revenue amongst 5 instead of 4 now.
But when you look across the state of Pennsylvania and look at the revenue being made by all of the casinos, has the state made money, in a sense, off these casinos?
Oh, absolutely. It was a $3.2 billion industry last year. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you how fast and furious it's grown. It's only six years old, but it's already $1 million less than Atlantic City, what it generated last year, which was $3.3 billion. So after 6 years, Pennsylvania is already a $3.2 billion gambling industry. 55% of that goes back to the state and municipalities in the form of state tax revenue from gambling proceeds.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money in 6 years. It is. That is why there's this continual hunger to give, you know, keep building these things and keep giving out these licenses. It's almost unfathomable how fast Pennsylvania has grown. It is now the second. It has a potential by the end of this year, which is after next month's revenues, it is going to be the second largest U.S. gambling market in the country, after only Las Vegas, surpassing Atlantic City. So that shows there is a huge market statewide.
My jaw dropped, I have to say, when you said that. Is that because of Pennsylvania's location, or there's something about the way that the casinos are run and distributed in the state?
Yes, you have a high population density state to begin with, and then you have what were 14 allotted licenses. 11 casinos of those 14 have been built, and you've got the 12th about to be, vied for,
right,
the second one in Philadelphia. So there's actually two more potential licenses, one in southwest Pennsylvania, that still haven't yet been built, and already the industry is growing at a record pace, revenue-wise. So you've got a combination of they're nicely distributed across the state, in a large state, and you've got this vast population density where they've spread them out to the point where it is making a lot of money for the state of Pennsylvania right now.
And we're talking about a mix of slots and table games.
Yes, you have seven of the licenses for what are called racinos, racetracks that have built casinos with them. Parks is one. Harris, Philadelphia is another example. Right. One more of those racetracks hasn't been built. Six of the seven have. And then you have the Category 2, the two in Philadelphia and the one in Pittsburgh. And then you have the casino resort licenses, which is Valley Forge. And then you have one in near Pittsburgh, Nemacolin. So they're different size casinos, and they're different facilities. The two in Philadelphia are called Category 2 because they're standalone. They're by themselves. They don't have a racetrack. But you have a nice mix in the state. They're not all the same either.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Now, we are talking about whether Philadelphia is ready for a second casino. And again, our guest is Suzette Parmley, who covers the casino industry for the Philadelphia Inquirer. 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Joshua from East Falls to join us. And Joshua, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
The question that I have is, after having read yet another article of the demise of Revel in Atlantic City, how sustainable could a new casino be in Philadelphia, especially the one that you talk about near where the Philadelphia Inquirer was, where it's more of a landmark slash huge entertainment complex? How sustainable could that really be? And also, what impact would that have on the casinos that are already in Philadelphia and the surrounding areas?
Joshua, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I think the death of Revel is that's a little bit premature. But Suzette, you had a piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer today about Revel's problems in Atlantic City.
Oh yes, I know the timing's perfect, but the impact of Hurricane Sandy has been huge on Atlantic City. Believe it or not, 2 weeks after they reopened, after the evacuation order was lifted, nearly all of them are struggling to get customers back because many of their customers came from North Jersey and New York. And how does that relate to our conversation today? That is, again, the impact Pennsylvania has had on Atlantic City. $2 billion is roughly what Atlantic City has lost in casino revenue since 2006. 2006 is the first year. It was the year that the first casino in Pennsylvania opened. So from 06 to now, Atlantic City has lost about $2 billion in revenue to Pennsylvania. So you've got a redistribution of that revenue I was talking about. It's not new revenue. It was revenue that was going to Atlantic City that is now going to Pennsylvania. And you're gonna have that similar trickle-down effect with a fifth casino in Philadelphia, where they're, like I said, the revenue pie, instead of being split among four casinos, you're adding a fifth. And is how much of that is going to be new revenue? Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. But already, like I mentioned, Harris Philadelphia is struggling. It's lost market share to Valley Forge. And what's going to happen with Sugar House when you have one that's within a few miles or blocks of it? They're very nervous right now on what impact that's going to have on their revenue. So, like I said, the biggest fear right now, you're going to have a zero-sum gain. You're not creating any new revenue. You're just, you know, throwing it around instead of four properties, five properties. And the biggest fear is that the market is already tapped out. You don't have any more new gamblers because they're going to Maryland, they're going to Atlantic City, they're going to New York. Every state now that surrounds Atlantic City has casinos. These are markets that used to be feeder markets for Atlantic City that have their own venues now, and there's no reason for these folks to drive an hour and a half to Atlantic City. That's why the resort is struggling the way it is.
Joshua, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And actually, just quoting you, Suzette, you wrote in today's paper, and this is about Revel, the $2.4 billion mega casino built with more than $300 million in state credits and tax rebates lost 5 days of business to Sandy, reopening at noon November 3rd. This is a complex that was built to the tune of $2.4 billion.
The most expensive, biggest casino ever built in Atlantic City is a flop right now. And bankruptcy, default are two words right now that are common on what may happen in the coming months for that property. There's no new business coming in. It's basically just cannibalized the other properties within Atlantic City. And then you have a major hurricane taking away substantial business that can't return or won't be returning for a few months because they're too busy repairing their homes. It's the perfect storm. Everything that could have gone wrong for Revel has gone wrong.
Wow. What happens when a casino goes bankrupt or goes belly up?
Usually they'll have a bidding process for it. It goes through bankruptcy. You'll have new investors interested. They'll bid on it. It goes to the one, the highest bidder, whatever. But it'll be a substantial lower cost than $2.4 billion. And usually they'll take over the property, bring in their new, you know, their own owners and managers, reshuffle everything from top to bottom, from its marketing to who it, you know, its design to adding more restaurants or whatever. Right now the formula hasn't worked for Revel. To a lot of people, is it went towards a much higher clientele, high-end clientele that doesn't exist. It wanted to be a Las Vegas-style mega casino. Borgata was able to pull that off, but Revel took it to the next level. It doesn't have a buffet. It's 100% non-smoking. You know, it doesn't allow any smoking at all on the gambling floor, which was just a really bold move that hasn't worked out for it.
And Suzette, we almost have to say goodbye to you here.
Sure.
So the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board, they will look at these proposals and, as we heard from Alan Greenberger, make their decision in, about a year or so?
It's going to be a good year, especially with six applicants. I described it as, you know, they're going to have a truckload of documents to be going, sifting through and vetting all these people involved with each project. Having two was a lot, but having six, that would compound the amount of time they're going to need to really make a decision that they feel is the best applicant and the best project for the city.
And when you say truckload, you mean truckload, right?
Truckload, right? A truckload of documents.
I hear you. Suzette Palmy, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. She's a business reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, covers the gambling industry in Pennsylvania and in Atlantic City. We will be hearing from Casino Free Philadelphia after this very short break. We'll hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
The Resident Ensemble Players, Delaware's professional acting company in residence at the University of Delaware, supports WHYY. Love, Lust, and Camels take center stage in the French farce Anything to Declare. Now through December 9th, An Unconsummated Honeymoon, a popular painting courtesan, one persuasive camel dealer, and a family named DuPont provide an abundance of Parisian mayhem and innuendo. For tickets, 302-831-2204 or delawarerep.org.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Congress holds closed-door hearings on the attacks in Benghazi. Also, a preview of the Latin Grammy Awards. Nominees include MacArthur genius Miguel Zenon. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. For nearly 75 years, Independence Blue Cross has been dedicated to improving the health and wellness of the people in southeastern Pennsylvania. Through the Independence Blue Cross Foundation and its new Healthy Futures Initiative, they are committed to transforming childhood wellness in our region. By encouraging children to eat right, get fit, and stay well through the new Healthy Futures Initiative, the Independence Blue Cross Foundation is changing the game. More information at ibxfoundation.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Today is the deadline for proposals to have a second casino here in Philadelphia. There was a pretty big fight over the opening of the first casino, Sugar House, and a second casino was shot down because of partnership problems. But now it looks like at least a consideration of licensing is back. And joining us now is Dan Hoido, and he's a member of the board of directors for Casino Free Philadelphia, working to stop casinos from coming to Philadelphia and close anyone that will open. He has taught at Temple University, has a PhD in political science. And Dan Hoido, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Are you going to fight this second casino license?
That's what we're gearing up to do right now.
And how are you going to do that?
What we do is we talk to the community. We reach out to the people who are concerned and get their input, see what they want to do, and we go from there.
And we're very early in the process here. Is there any way to gauge how the public in Philadelphia, how people feel about a second casino?
Well, there was a poll in the Inquirer. I think maybe your previous guest mentioned it.
Yes.
And 47% say they're more concerned with gambling addiction than jobs. 39% say jobs. People are concerned, and there isn't a majority support. There isn't support in the neighborhood. We've talked to groups, and I don't think they want it.
And when you say you've talked to groups, what kind of groups have you talked to?
Well, we've met with groups and then talked to people in the Spring Garden area. We had a meeting last week, and people from various parts of the city came by, and they represented groups. So that's our sense.
And I'm just curious about how you propose to offer these criticisms and what you plan to do to try to prevent a second casino in Philadelphia. Am I getting ahead of the process?
A little bit, yeah. We go through a process. We talk it over, and we do what makes sense as it comes along. But I think part of the process is to get involved in this conversation and note that what everybody else is talking about, what they miss is where this supposed money is coming from, where the revenue is coming from, where the jobs are coming from, and that's coming from people suffering from gambling addiction. That's what casinos are in the business of doing.
But are you saying that everyone who gambles has an addiction?
No. But if you look at who gambles at casinos, there are surveys in Connecticut, there's a survey in California. People going into the casino survey casino patrons, 70% of respondents were reporting at least one symptom of gambling addiction.
The idea that they can't control themselves?
They have the same kind of symptoms as people addicted to other substances, and that's why the new DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, that's coming out next year is going to list gambling disorder as a substance abuse problem.
I hear what you're saying, but we also know, for better or for worse, and we heard from Suzette Parmley, is that gambling has been good for Pennsylvania when it comes to revenues. How do you counter that argument?
Well, again, where's the money coming from? It's coming from people who are suffering from gambling addiction. I don't see how that's good. Also, it's coming from local residents, okay? So we analyzed the first year of Sugar House. Money coming from Philadelphia residents going to Sugar House, lost to Sugar House, outweighs the revenue coming to the city 10 to 1. So that's money that's not going to local businesses. That's money that's not going to other places in the city.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Getting three views on gambling in the city of Philadelphia and the possibility of a second casino in this city. Looks like the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board will be considering a number of proposals. Today is the deadline for proposals. And we're curious about where you stand on this issue. And both of our guests, who's at Parmley and Dan Hoido, referenced a poll that was done by the Philadelphia Inquirer, finding that there was some opposition to a second casino and some concerns about gambling addiction as well. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Greg from Cedar Park in West Philadelphia to join us. Greg, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm an urban planner and not a priori opposed to casinos, but I'm also a realist, if not a fatalist, and that whether I like them or not, the numbers work. I think we're getting another one, though I admire and encourage Casino Free Philadelphia to fight the good fight. But that said, I'm deeply skeptical of another casino near Sugar House. It continues to conflict with the civic vision for the Delaware River, on whose development corporation your earlier guest, Alan Greenberger, sits. And Steve Wynn is also not the kind of flashy developer that Philly wants or needs. His borderline racist comments during his first fleeting and aborted casino proposal. Remember, the site will be, quote, the site will be near my friends, the Vietnamese. They love to gamble. That should give everybody some pause. But as for South Philly, the Delaware Avenue big box corridor is already a lost cause. That said, Penn Treaty Park near Sugar House and the proposed new site is a gem that should be strengthened, not swallowed by acres of parking. And so I tend to adhere to the Inga Saffron, the architecture critic for the Inquirer, her line as far as the urban design standards to which we should hold Philly casinos. And so creating a gambling cluster, which, you know, having two casinos right near each other, is contrary to the model that she cited of New Orleans, where a single casino nestled among downtown hotels and a convention center doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. So then we're looking at the Bart Blatstein proposal, and he knows how to work in Philly, and while his Provence idea is tacky, it's definitely salvageable from an architectural perspective. And, you know, there's historic preservation, we're preserving the Inquirer building, and it supports efforts to revitalize North Broad Street, but I'm sure Casino Free Philly can attest that be prepared for a long, drawn-out fight with Chinatown, long Philly's most abused neighborhood. The gloves will most certainly come off.
Well, Greg, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Dan, I'd be curious about your response. If Bart Blatstein's plan has some legs, do you think there will be some pushback from the neighborhood?
I definitely think so. And I think your caller raises two good points. First, that the casinos along the riverfront really end up stifling development, the kind of development that could produce tens of thousands of jobs, millions in revenue just for the city. And the second point that he brings up is Wynn's comments when he came here. Mm-hmm. Why is Wynn calling these sites delicious? Why is he so happy to come here? Because he knows that there are high rates of gambling addiction among Asians, among Southeast Asians.
Is that true?
There's been surveys that show, that show that it's as many as much as six times the national average. There's studies that show sort of a smaller population in Connecticut that maybe 60% have five or more symptoms, which is say full on pathological gambling in the Southeast Asian community.
So, are you agreeing with Steve Wynn?
No. I am saying what Wynn wants to do is exploit gambling addiction. That's what casinos do. And I think what people also don't realize is that there are much higher rates of gambling addiction among African Americans, among Hispanics. And if you look at the groups he's talking about groups with higher rates of gambling addiction. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Also, you see higher rates of gambling addiction among lower-income people.
Let me ask you about something, because I know that your organization has also looked at predatory gambling and some of the ways that casinos keep people gambling. One of them is being open 24/7, and the fact that people can get credit on the floor so that if you need more money, it's quite convenient.
Right, right. So if you're gambling and you tap out your ATM, you tap out your credit card, well, then they're ready to offer you credit. Now, why else are you going to do that unless you're taking advantage of someone suffering from gambling addiction?
Go ahead. That's all right. And one more thing, then I do want to get back to our callers. You also raised concerns about the fact that there's free alcohol if you're gambling.
Sure. Well, there's that, but there's plenty of other things, what the casinos call comps. They can track in real time someone playing a slot machine and see if they're slowing down, and they'll send someone around to talk to them, say, how you feeling? Offer them a drink, offer them a comp. But the other thing they do is they'll send out letters, they'll send out mail, because they get everybody's address when they sign up for their rewards cards. And if they haven't been there for a while, they say, hey, come on back. We'll give you $200 or free play, something like that. And if you're trying not to go, it's awfully hard when those things are coming in and the advertisements everywhere. And they're sending a free shuttle bus. Where's the free shuttle bus go? It goes down to South Philly.
Let me get, looks like Chuck from the Loft District to join us. And Chuck, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you're having this, you're talking about this today.
Thanks.
I live actually at 13th and Callow Hill. I was an early settler here in the Loft District about 20 years ago. And pretty much all my neighbors and everyone that I've spoken to, nobody really likes the idea of a casino across the street from us or from this area. You know, we just don't think it's a good idea for modern urban planning and, you know, all the issues that come along with it. And now I guess that we're getting a little idea of what it might be. It sounds even maybe a little bit more sort of maybe not appropriate. But like I said, most of the people that I've spoken to, pretty much everyone, I don't know anyone that likes the idea, and we're all planning on fighting it.
How are you going to do that, Chuck?
Well, we fought the baseball stadium at the time when they wanted to put it here. I mean, I went on the news. I did whatever I could. I don't know if I had any actual effect on that, but, you know, we're here developing this neighborhood residentially, and we're getting some restaurants here. We're getting some other things here, and, you know, we'll do whatever it takes. We'll go to, you know, when there's meetings, when there's, you know, town halls, you know, we'll get involved. I know I will, and I know many, many, many of my neighbors will, to, you know, try to be a vocal part of it. You know, and
I hear you. I hear you. No, Chuck, thank you for calling into Radio Times. Let me give Dan Hoyto a chance to respond. Dan, your thoughts?
Well, that's what I've been hearing too, and we're ready to help out any way we can.
What do you think about Bob Brady's proposal? And his proposal, his idea is to have the city run a casino and essentially keep more of the revenue for itself. Does that make any sense to you, Dan?
No, not at all. That sounds even worse. That gives the city even more of a stake in creating gambling addiction.
Let me see what it's Reverend Jesse. I think it's Reverend Jesse Brown. Is that right, from Nicetown?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
I was listening to the conversation, and I was concerned on a number of areas. One, the city is, particularly the city, the person did not know the numbers in terms of how many employees, what kind of jobs they had. As we predicted long time ago in looking at the casino issue, we have a colossal failure in a number of areas. The communities do not benefit from the casinos, as it's already been demonstrated. No one talks about how many new businesses were generated in the casino areas. Nobody talks about what businesses might have come had there not been casinos. And in the area particularly of jobs, it is not a benefit if companies offer health insurance, but the employees have to pay for it. Why is it we cannot get a breakdown of how many employees in a particular casino that make $20,000 or less, or $30,000 or less, or $50,000 or more? It is not a good job if all you get to do is keep your tips and go home every night.
Let me, I appreciate those questions, and I'm not sure if Dan Hoido can answer them or not. Dan, I'm curious about your response.
Test. This is a statewide required monthly test of the emergency alert system, originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Harrisburg. This is only a test.
That's completely baseless. I have no idea how he came up with that. But the point is, he doesn't care.
Well,
the administration is not looking into this at all.
Well, I think you have to be careful about saying that, that an individual person doesn't care. I mean, I think that's
sure.
That's too much. They may disagree with you, come to a different conclusion, but I don't think you can say that someone doesn't care.
Well, that's true, and maybe he just didn't bring the numbers, and I don't bring the numbers all the time. So, I don't know how they could have gone through kind of due diligence on this and looked at the research that I've been looking at, looked at the studies that I've been looking at, and still come to the conclusions they're coming to.
Well, Dan, we have to end our conversation. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. I am sure we will revisit this issue. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. That's Dan Hoido, a member of the Board of Directors for Casino Free Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, much more there for you to check out on our social media. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us, though. We'll be right back.